This is fine. This is a poor substitute for therapy, but an excellent substitute for other podcasts.
We're not like other podcasts.
Join us as we find the answers to the universe's biggest questions like, is butter a carb? Does crying burn calories? And what the fuck am I doing with my life? We're here to be your part-time therapist, astrologer, concierge doctor, and fairy godmother. Do you need someone to validate you today? Cool. Come on in. We're fine. This is fine. Hey, Cosmic Cuties. Welcome back to another episode of This Is Fine. Today, I'm so honored to have my friend Oak, founder of Oak Astrology School, here with us as our special guest for today's celestial lesson. Oak is also a close friend of our moon mom, Shannon, who we all know and love here on This Is Fine. Shannon actually introduced the two of us, and I was immediately drawn into Oak's intelligence, empathy, fiercely cool energy, sense of humor, and Virgo rising, of course. And I've learned so much from our time working together on articles for my journalism work. And recently I took Oak's cosmic course on romance called Don't Pull Up Your Crush's Chart, which first of all, LOL, that's an incredible name. And this was the inspiration for our chat today. Let's talk about finding your star match, your romantic partner in your own astrology chart, your natal chart. Where is your future partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, spouse, significant other? Where are they hiding? What might they be like? What are you looking for? Astrology can give you some hints via your descendant and descendant ruler. Not sure what that means? Don't worry, we'll get into it. If you need some foundational intel, go back to episodes 6, 15, and 39 to learn about the moon signs, rising signs, and the 12 houses of the zodiac. This will help tremendously with context for today's chat and give you the tools you need to take advantage of this galactic lesson. If you've never looked at your own chart, there's a link in the episode description for you to grab that. This will be your map for the episode and possibly for life. Before we get into our episode today, Dan and I would be so grateful if you left us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple. If you send me a screenshot of your review on Instagram or via email, I'm fine at thisisfinepodcast.com. I'll buy you a coffee, for real. All right, let's do this thing. Okay, Oak, my love, my friend, welcome to This Is Fine for the very first time. We are so grateful to have you here today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Okay, before we get into our lesson, and I know we're going to talk a lot about debunking relationship astrology myths, can you tell us where this journey began for you, your journey into astrology and specifically relationship astrology? I know you have a really good story and I know it's juicy and I haven't even heard it yet, so please spill.
So I came into astrology after about like 5 or 6 years or longer of just doing a lot of spiritual inquiry. And then I had my first reading and the astrologer told me to study astrology. And I guess from there out, it was just like a super deep dive and I didn't read anything else for 3 to 4 years. So that was a really, wow. It was just a whole portal that I entered basically. And I now have a school. So I've been a professional astrologer for about 8 years. And about 4 years ago, I opened up a school. And the school is just really centered around using astrology as a tool for healing and counseling and just the processes of liberation and self-liberation. So I'm really, really grateful for this work and just really love it so much, obviously. With relationship astrology, the most funny thing is that, you know, as an astrologer, you receive a lot of questions from clients, and I actually really...
I bet you do.
I really never loved love questions, and it was probably my least favorite thing to be asked because I thought it was kind of run-of-the-mill, or it's like, you know, what does that really have to do with like your soul journey? But that was me in a different stage of my life, I think. And in the past year, I've come to the realization that like love readings is actually probably one of my specialties.
That makes me so happy. Like, what a romantic story in itself.
It is, you know, it is romantic, and like I'm a Libra and I'm a Taurus moon. So I'm like very Venusian. And so
yes,
for me to be not really engaged with love in a very like, in having like a very, let me think of the words, like for me to not have such a profound relationship to love, I think that there's something about my own journey that there was probably some blockages that I had. Yeah, I think just through doing like my own healing work and just staying really dedicated to that, like I've really opened up a lot. And actually, this past summer in 2023, there was this really profound Venus retrograde in Leo. And
yes,
what I was feeling was that people really needed a lot of love advice. So for the summertime, I opened up my books for just these very short 20-minute love readings. And I called them laser sharp love readings. And within that process, I mean, I was booked the entire summer. And yeah. Within that process, I learned so much about love, and I learned so much about like the human condition. It was really powerful, and it changed me. It changed me to be in this space of like holding a container for love for people. And I actually, like through this process, I think that it completely shifted my entire attitude towards astrology in general.
Wow. Dude, I didn't expect that at all. That was way deeper. Thought it was going to be some juicy like relationship story. And this is like a beautiful arc. Oh my God.
It's really deep. And so
yeah.
Like people really want love. And any reader knows that, you know, the primary questions are love, money, and then like, right. Just like path.
Like health.
Life. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like health, wealth, love. Kind mm-hmm. of. I mean,
absolutely.
Those are all the questions we get in terms of journalism too, right? Like, how do we feel more loved? How do we get healthier? How do we make more money? It's like kind of like the core of some of our human condition, I suppose. Like the human part of humanness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think love is essentially the primary theme when it comes to our human condition. So, yeah. You know, to be working specifically with the topic of love is actually the core of one's life.
Yep. I love that it took a Venus retrograde to bring this up for you. It's so on brand.
Totally.
All right. Yeah. So now that we know more about your background and how you got into this, I did mention in the intro that I just took your course, Don't Pull Up Your Crush's Chart, which is the most hilarious title for an astrology love course. Love that. So obviously we want to get into that today. That was the inspiration. So before we get into it, we do have a lot of beginner astrological debutantes, if you will. Little cosmic debutantes. not to be infantilizing to our beginner listeners. But let's describe outline some of our core concepts, right? Like the 12 zodiac signs, their planetary rulers, because that's going to be important. The 12 houses, we can do this really briefly. And then ascendant and descendant. We do have episodes that I have linked to in the episode description. If you need to dive deeper into all of those concepts, you're listening right now. We've got the resources, we've got the materials, but Oak, do you want to go through the signs and their rulers pretty quickly?
Sure.
All right, so we're just going to run through some quick vocab and concepts, and Oak's going to chime in if I mess anything up because he is the teacher and I am literally the student. All right, so we're going to start with the first zodiac sign, Aries, cardinal fire, ruled by the planet Mars. Our second up is Taurus. It's fixed Earth, ruled by the planet Venus. After that, we've got Gemini, mutable air, ruled by the planet Mercury. After that, we've got Cancer, cardinal water, ruled by a luminary instead of a planet. It's ruled by the moon. After that, we've got another luminary with Leo, fixed fire, ruled by the sun. After that, we've got one of mine and Oak's favorite signs, Virgo, our mutable earth sign, ruled by Mercury. Then we've got Libra, cardinal air, ruled by Venus. Scorpio, fixed water, ruled by Mars. Sagittarius, mutable fire, ruled by Jupiter. Capricorn, cardinal earth, ruled by Saturn. Aquarius, fixed air, ruled by Saturn. Pisces, our final sign, mutable water, ruled by Jupiter. And this is in terms of traditional astrology, which uses the more inner planets. It does not use Uranus, Neptune, or Pluto as ruling planets. So this is the kind of framework. Am I correct that, Oak, this is the framework you use as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm like, we're traditional in this house. These traditional astrological values. So those are the main concepts, because we are going to be talking about the sign of your descendant. So we'll get to that as well. And what the ruling planet is, where to find that. Then there are also the 12 houses, and they rule different areas of your life. We do have another episode on that as well, if you need a refresher. But there's the first house, the second house, the third house, all the way through the 12th house. We're going to be talking about a few important ones today, including the seventh house, which typically signifies your one-to-one relationships. Would you say that's correct, Oak?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. And then the ascendant, which is your rising sign, and the descendant, which is the opposite of your rising sign. And I'll let Oak explain a little bit more about how that represents like the you versus the partner, like me versus we. I don't know if those are your exact words, but we'll get more into that. Okay, so the natal chart is giving us this map with the signs and the planets, the ascendant and the descendant. And your take, Oak, is that we should start here with our own charts before pulling up a potential partner's. Do you want to explain why that is your approach?
Yes. So I gave love readings for the entire summer, and I did nothing but pull up the individual's chart that was asking for a reading. I did not pull up any person's boyfriend or girlfriend or a love interest in question. And I think that that's a really good attitude to have in general, because when we're thinking about love for ourselves and we're wanting love, we want to know where to find love. We want to know our triggers and our icks and like all the things that are just associated with that topic. Like every topic that you can actually ever have in your life is in your birth chart because it represents your life. So love, even though it involves another party, would not be any different. And so it's actually strong incentive to learn your birth chart in this way that isn't as surface, to actually dive deeper into your birth chart, because you will find much more than you were hoping for, or much more than you had initially thought, I think.
Right. You've got like this treasure map with your natal chart, right? And you were just saying like you can find so much if you know where to look and what to look for, including like what are my icks, which I think is one of the funniest concepts. Maybe that's a separate episode, like discovering your icks in your natal chart.
Whoa.
I know, right? Like, Virgo rising, we're going to get like micro specific with these details. But we can find so much, including what a lot of people are looking for, which is romantic partnership. I think it's a noble endeavor. I think we all want to feel love in our lives in different ways. A lot of people are looking for partnership or a more fulfilling partnership, perhaps, or maybe how to understand their partner better. So what you've said is by starting with your own chart, you can understand how to navigate these partnerships better. Is that correct?
Totally.
So let's get into what areas of the chart would you be looking at just to start off? Let's say you're looking at my chart right now. We can drag me. We can use my chart. I'm an open book. You're looking at perhaps my ascendant and descendant. Would you start there?
We're all familiar with our sun, moon, and rising, possibly. But when you when you first start looking into your chart, you're probably going to discover your sun, your moon, and your rising sign. And the rising sign or the ascendant is the utmost expression of your physicality. So your body and just generally how you kind of interface with the world, right? Like when you shake someone's hand and you meet them face to face and just like the way that you perceive them and like all their mannerisms, like that's all wrapped into their ascendant. And by contrast, the utmost expression of relationship in the chart is the descendant. Because when you look at a birth chart, the ascendant is this point on the very left side, and that would be the eastern corner of the chart. And then
right where the sun is ascending,
where the sun
over
rises. Yes,
where the sun is rising.
And then where the sun sets on the western side, which would be like the furthest right part of the chart, that would be the descendant. And so it is this place that even when we look at it just from like when we're looking at the chart as an image, we're seeing that it is the furthest place from the ascendant, furthest place from the body. So our relationships are a direct reflection or a direct polarity to our physicality, our expression. And this is a really important point of contemplation. So your ascendant is Virgo, and so that automatically would make your descendant Pisces.
Right.
Right. And I think someone would normally think like, oh, that means that I'm going to get married to a Pisces, or that means that all of my friends are Pisces. And there's a fractal of truth to that. But of course that there's ways to deepen into what does this actually mean? And like, how do I kind of actually relate to this? How does this actually show up in my life? And the thing is that because polarity is a natural law of this world and of universal thinking and of just like most cosmologies, right? Like, especially in the earth realm where we're literally in a space of polarity. It creates a question actually of like, what am I attracting? And it's a thing of what do I want? Because when we're thinking about love, we're oftentimes thinking about what I want. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this other thing of like, well, this is actually what the world shows me. This is what the universe brings me. And that actually is all in the descendant. So our descendant is not just about what is coming in and like, you know, what we want. It's also this really deep contemplation where you get to see yourself and see your relationships.
Ah, like a mirror.
Yes, it is a mirror for sure. You know, I'm a Virgo rising too. So my descendant is also Pisces. And I'm pretty sure that maybe you can relate to this, Dominique, that it's like attracting a lot of artists and creatives and a lot of people that have a, maybe even more of like a spiritual temperament.
This is really interesting. And I think it kind of leads into a question I was going to bring up later, a question both from the audience and myself. It's interesting because I don't attract a lot of that. Okay. I end up more with a lot of Aries energy, a lot of like very strong Mars energy, which is not Pisces at all. Another question from the audience was very similar. Like, what if I'm looking at my chart and it says like, oh, in theory, I should be attracted to this, but I'm not attracting that, or my past relationships haven't been an embodiment of that. You can drag me for a second if you would like to and use me as an example. I have not figured out, neither in general nor astrologically, why Aries men are the Achilles heel. It's my eighth house, not my seventh. Like, what's your take as a professional on that?
Word. Well, the next step, the next step of kind of like going a little bit deeper into the descendant is, well, first you contemplate. You're like, oh, well, how do I relate to this archetype? For me, I don't really like Pisces as something that I'm romantically attracted to. So that already tells me something. And what I was going to add is that it's like, I do attract artists and I do attract people that are, you know, like very spiritual, but I also attract a lot of people who are very disorganized. And that
no boundaries
drives me crazy. And so, you know, it's like, there's just this there's a constant lesson that's happening. So I think that the descendant shows us these potentialities of what relationship can be, what relationship is. And it also shows us like what we're working with, like the primary material that we're constantly being met and like being pushed up against.
Okay. So we can look into some deeper things, not like literally, oh, we're attracted to Pisces or we're attracting Pisces. Like, it's not necessarily that literal, but we're looking at certain characteristics.
I would say yes. And if you get too literal about it, it just starts to not really... I think if you get too literal about it, you really miss out on like extreme nuance. And there, I mean, I think a lot of astrology really is nuance.
And it can just feel wrong. And I think that's where some people can get discouraged or like turned off by astrology. There are a lot of questions we got from our audience that have to do with like, oh, which sign is blank most compatible with, or what is most compatible with me? Are there signs that are incompatible? It says here on this website that I'm a Libra and my boyfriend's a Capricorn and we're not supposed to get along at all. I feel like this is a real good opportunity for you to kind of debunk that whole mindset of like sign versus sign, like one sign per person.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not the way you do it. it's just not, because the chart is way more dynamic than that. And so to have one particular sign fulfill like a chart that has like many, many, many different narratives and many different places that want fulfillment, that shows just the complication of life and the complication of relationships in general.
So for people listening who are like, okay, so I thought this whole time that I'm a Pisces, so I should be looking for a Scorpio or a Virgo or whatever it is. What's your lesson, like, to just keep learning more about the whole chart?
Let's put a bookmark on that question and really
talk and come back to it after, like, we dig more.
What does it mean to identify love, and what does it mean to understand where to find love in your own birth chart?
Ooh, okay. So we're going to circle back to this. Basically, if you came in with that question and you're like, does this sign match this sign? Is this a good match? Hold that for a second. We're going to go into why that doesn't work, but just know, like, you can throw that ideology out the window. Fair?
Please do.
please throw it away.
Please throw it away.
Okay, so we're coming back to the ascendant, the descendant of our own charts. We're not looking at someone else yet.
Yeah. And it's like, by looking at the descendant, we're actually identifying a primary theme when it comes to love for us. We're looking at this window of how love can come in, or how relationships actually just tend to come in. Like, the ascendant is the utmost expression of you. And by polarity, the descendant is the utmost expression of relationships. So when we dive deep into the descendant, we're actually going to get a lot of information. So we were just talking about our Pisces descendants and how you tend to be attracted to Aries, and how I actually don't really like Pisces in terms of romance.
So both of us are like, wait, what?
So you need to actually go to the ruler of your descendant. So your there descendant is a sign. And we just said that our descendant is Pisces. So that would mean Jupiter. Jupiter is going to tell us a lot about who partnership actually is going to be most identified as, or how relationships are just most materialized in the chart. So what's great about this is that if you're looking at this idea of, like, where can I find love? Where does love actually happen for me most? You know, if your ruler of the descendant is in the ninth house, then the likelihood of your partner being from another country, from a culture that is outside of your own, that you meet more people while you're traveling, like, that's a really good tidbit of information.
So true. Right? Mine's like the 11th, 12th cusp. It's 11th in Coke. So I'm like, Coke, for those of you listening, is K-O-C-H. So I'm like, oh, maybe through groups of friends, like through community, like friend of a friend. I'm so curious where your Jupiter is. you don't need to tell.
No, mine is actually in the sixth house, leaning into the seventh. So
interesting. Okay.
You know, for me, love is service in a way. And I mean, like, I have a really great placement for the ruler of my descendant. And so I just actually meet a lot of really great people. I have a lot of great people in my life. And
it's a Pisces Jupiter?
It is, actually.
You're so lucky.
I have a very, very special placement. But, I think that in itself, you know, that's shown me why I've attracted so many great teachers. Amazing, amazing, amazing teachers. And also, you know, it's like, if we're looking at this Pisces descendant for both of us, and it's like, okay, both of us have Jupiter as the planet that represents our relationship life, then the likelihood that we're going to want a partner that's going to teach us things, that there is a really deep exchange of knowledge that occurs, like, that is so valuable and important. So,
like, I can show you the world.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. We love an Aladdin moment.
Yeah, I was going to sing it, but then I was like, not today. We're not going that hard today. Yeah, and we have the same descendant, but then our descendant ruler is both in a different sign and a different house. So we get different experiences, even though we have the same descendant sign.
Well, you're probably going to want to marry someone who's, I don't want to be deductive, but the things I've noticed
we're like trying to not be at all.
Jupiter and Leo tends to just really attract all these, like, superstars, right? Like, someone that is like a true artist or has like this really beautiful vibrancy. And it does relate to celeb. I've seen it in that way. So it's kind of like you're looking for someone, or you're attracting people that really have this, like, you know, star quality, for lack of a better word.
Well, save the date, Oak, for my star-studded wedding.
But is that true for you, though?
Maybe more like kind of a Leo-esque presence, sort of like larger than life, like warm, magnanimous, mm-hmm. confident, like can hold their own in a conversation. Same kind of like Jupiter qualities of like, yeah, like I know a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff. Yeah, that's really interesting. I've never dated a celebrity.
I mean, it doesn't need to be a celebrity. It just means that there is that star quality.
I'm on Raya, so I could try.
Good luck.
Good freaking luck. Okay, so reeling it in, sorry. So let's maybe go through another example. I have a friend who actually volunteered her chart, so we could look at her descendant and maybe descendant ruler just to give another, you know, sneak peek at what this might look like if you're listening at home. So her ascendant is Scorpio, which means her descendant is Taurus. Lovely. So then we would go look for her Venus, which is in the first house in Scorpio.
Where's her Mars at?
Second house, Sag, conjunct Moon and Pluto.
Okay, so the reason, so this, your friend has the ruler of the descendant in the first house, and her, I don't want to be too technical, but.
Okay, we can try it.
Let's see. This is very dramatic because I honestly feel like this person kind of wants her relationship to serve her.
Okay.
And so there's a way that probably attracting people that are going to be in service to her in some way, or
kind of like feed me grapes and fan me with like fig leaves.
Yes,
energy.
I'm trying to say it in a nice way.
Palm fronds. Yeah. She wants to be worshipped like a goddess.
I think so.
All right, let's do another example. Let's just make up the ascendant, descendant, and chart ruler so we can give just another flavor, another example.
So let's say that you are a Sagittarius rising, and then that would mean that your descendant is Gemini. Right. And so you would definitely be looking to Mercury as the planet that most represents relationship in your chart.
Cool.
But also because it's Mercury, like that's going to say, you know, Mercury has a personality. It's like usually like a sprightly, youthful person that's communicative. And then they also are going to be having kind of like a youthful quality as well. So, you know, I've seen it a lot where, and it doesn't always have to be, but, you know, like Gemini or Mercury representing the relationship can be dating someone that's younger than you or dating someone that has a youth to it. So I think it's like, I'm encouraging people that are getting interested in their chart to like feel into what that actually means rather than, okay, I'm going to date a Gemini.
Right.
Right. Because, you know, for both of us, with our descendants, it's like we're attracted to people that are learned and have knowledge and wisdom that we can like exchange. And like it doesn't always mean that it's going to be, you know, a specific type of person per se, but that like, but the theme that joins together all of our relational dynamics is probably based around learning.
Okay. Beautiful. So I feel like that leads to another question. We had a few that came from the audience on this topic. If we're looking at the descendant and we're not just saying, oh, I'm going to date a Gemini, but what can we learn about ourselves, how we interact in relationships, or maybe how our relationships interact with us? There are a few things. I'm just going to list them out. What are the traits our partners might dislike in us, or what we might dislike in a partner so we can better understand them? What are our partner's love languages based on the descendant or the descendant ruler? And how can we learn that we act in relationships or interface with partners, or even what our attachment style might be based on this? I know that was a lot. So let's start with, you know, what can we derive from maybe our partner's love language or their pet peeves with us based on, let's use that example of Gemini descendant.
Well, you know, all the questions that you just asked, like the entirety of that batch of questions is really based on how to look at your own birth chart. Because the things that you have issues with And usually it's going to be like aspects to like your moon or your Venus or your Mercury, like any of the personal planets.
Okay, so not just the descendant.
No, the descendant is going to show us kind of like this portal upon which partnership enters our life. And it's going to show us the style of how we relate to others, right?
Right, like behind door number three, like here's your relationship, here's the portal.
And it usually has like a, it usually has like an energetic signature. Like it has a type of style that it shows up as. And how we engage that is going to be based on like all of the themes in our own birth chart between like the sun to the moon to Venus and Mars. Like those are kind of the personal planets. So how we most react and engage in love and what we're looking for and what makes us feel good is going to be based within those planets. That's why it's kind of imperative that you understand your chart or at least these personal planets, because it's going to show how you react to things. It's going to show what your preferences are. And so within those preferences, it's going to be obvious what you don't like about other people. And when you have a lot of, when you have a lot of dynamics with the moon, or the moon actually just describes like one primary layer of attachment style.
Sure.
So your attachment style might not be something that's harmonious with your partner's attachment style, but you have to know your attachment style well.
Your own.
So that you can actually articulate that, so that when you're in relationship with anyone, you actually have much better language. It's easy to identify, you know, like when we start getting into astrology, just for the sake of being nosy about our partner, but we don't even really know ourselves deeply. We're actually just creating drama.
Drag them.
Yeah, we're just creating drama.
It's dragging me too.
Like, that's why I think it's like, you know, how are we using astrology? Are we using it as this tool that is going to just be something to gossip about? Or are we using it as a way to actually deepen into ourselves and have it be something that is practical and generative?
Right. Okay. So let's say someone's coming to this and they're like, I'm just trying to use it to find a good partner for me. Like, where do we go from there? I feel like that's an honest thing that people come to astrology often with.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great question. But it's like, what is a good partner? And and the question is like, isn't a good partner someone that is harmonious with you?
Right. Okay. So deepening your self-exploration first, let's say you're in the process of that. Would you then say there are certain ways where you can navigate toward a partner?
Of course. Yeah, it's a lot of it is just becoming very clear about what we want. But oftentimes what we want is like really based on our own process and where we're at with our healing.
Right.
And
so like digging into what we want and why might be a little bit more revealing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the moon is a great indicator because our attachment styles are predicated by our history. And they're predicated by our family dynamics, and they're predicated upon, you know, like what we actually define as security. But that's really just based on like our emotional history.
Okay. So let's say you've got like a moon Saturn square. I'm thinking like mother, father energy, like historically, right? Is that it? Moon Saturn?
Yeah.
Would be like maternal, paternal. Yeah. I was like, wait, did I get that right? So let's say you have that signature in a chart. Would that indicate like some kind of tension in your attachment style?
It can. Yeah. Because there's a strong potentiality of shutting down because there's a lack of safety in being able to feel emotionally vulnerable. And there's also a desire for security in a really profound way. And so that can show up as like having a hard time letting others in or making sure that we maintain a really an intimate space only for ourselves, that it's like very few people can really drop into that. And so that can lead to these feelings of loneliness. So of course, you know, someone would come to me with a moon square Saturn and they're like, I want love. And I'm like, well, are you able to let that in?
Okay. And so you would look there, both within yourself and within your chart.
Yeah. And then the descendant would describe like, you know, who is coming in and how someone is coming in. But what I'll say, and just like as a way to like tie together a lot of the things we've talked about so far, is like what I've actually learned about love is that it is the core of someone's birth chart. So when you're giving a love reading, you're actually just going into their deepest shit. Because love is the most important thing, and it's the riskiest thing, and it's the thing that really wrenches our heart. And so all of our traumas are wrapped up in love as well. So, you know, we want love. Everyone wants love. And it's easy to say, what's a good partner for me? And I think that really what it comes down to is, like, you know, if we're really looking for this deep level of satisfaction and harmony and partnership, then we are going to be addressing all of these really specific layers within ourselves, and the chart is able to take each and every one of these various narratives within ourselves and show us kind of like a pathway to address and identify.
Beautiful. So I got some similar but a little bit different questions. I don't want to like sidebar too much, but from the audience, a few similar things. Where does free will come in with all of this compatibility and astrology? Like, are we destined to be with someone from birth, or where does, you know, the free will factor? Do we have multiple soulmates? And does astrology tell us how many loves we'll have in our life? So basically, how much of this is sort of like predetermined, preset, versus we're, you know, sentient beings with free will?
Okay, this is a really good question. So
I know I loved getting these.
This is a really good question because I think that it's important to give context as to like where I'm coming from, in sharing all this information. And I think that it's actually quite limiting to think of our charts as just you yourself, period. Like our charts, because they contain our mother and our father, they contain our ancestry and our history. And you actually have to look at yourself in that way, or at least then that tells us something about what life represents. Because when we're looking at the chart, it is like a multidimensional thing. And so within that kind of like, within all these different historical narratives that our chart represents and what our life represents, then that means that our love experiences and our experiences of love and our luck with love are also going to show up there as well. Because some people don't have luck in love, right? And that would be more of like looking at kind of ancestral narratives or like karmic themes that impact our ability to have flowing romance.
Right.
And so, you know, there is this idea of free will. And I think also like some people are attracted to the things that are not good for them. And that is free will too. But I also think that within our chart, it's a collection of kind of like these repetitive patterns. Like our Venus sign, what we're attracted to is a repetitive pattern of being attracted to a specific type of aesthetic, a specific type of person, a specific type of style of, you know, experiencing communication and closeness. And that essentially is a type of karma, because karmas are repetitive themes. They're repetitive actions. Okay. So within this idea of free will, it's like, yes, we can be creating the same type of relationship dynamic over and over and over. But I think that it is wrapped within this like karmic narrative.
Beautiful.
So there are things that we can do when we have the consciousness and the language of astrology to really help with that, to identify the places where we are creating these patterns over and over. And this is kind of like what I really saw this summer, is like just people continually creating these patterns for themselves. And so our relationships really are just a reflection of these themes. Well, relationships tend to be these themes that where we're trying to address like deeper wounding within ourselves. So yes, we can call it love, and it's like, yeah, cause love feels good, but you know, feeling good is like the best part of like not feeling bad. Right. And it's like, that's why I think that like, yes, we are talking about, we want love, but we are also are talking about like, we don't want to be in the pain of ourselves as well.
Right.
And that's why, you know, and this is like really what I learned and, through doing all these readings this summer, it's like, there's this concept in most cosmologies that, you know, there is only one of us here, right? That like, yes, we interface with relationships, but they are actually just this projection of who we are inside. And that is why starting off with descendant, it is more of a contemplation of like, how is this an expression of me? Even though it's something that's so not ideal. Like for me, I literally cannot stand people that have no sense of time, that disrespect my time. And that is very like Piscean, right? That's my descendant.
So triggering for me too.
So it's very triggering, right? But that is a reflection of my own impatience with myself. So the universe is bringing in people that are teaching me about compassion.
Right, empathy,
over and
patience.
Over and over, patience. And like just not being as... not being as worried about this, the concept of time.
Oh my God, literally they're sending us Pisces, they being like this, the universe, sending us Pisces energy to get us to chill the fuck out.
Yes. And so we do have these phases. No. We have these phases of people coming in. And like, you know, I think that's a really cool thing. When you start learning a little bit of astrology, you're realizing, oh my God, I have so many Aries in my life. I have so many Geminis in my life. And every time I've witnessed that, it's like I'm literally learning those qualities of those signs, just like in the most simplistic way. So sometimes you don't need to be an astrologer to witness a lot of these themes. But, you know, this idea that there's only one of us here, or that there's nothing that is happening in your life that is outside of yourself. It's true. So the descendant is not just this thing of like, you know, it's my partner. It also is just this like very poetic reflection of who you are. And it's really sad to say, because, you know, some people's descendant can actually be very challenging. Like you have Pluto on the descendant, and then you're attracting people that are abusive, right? Like people that come in are trying to overpower you. And that is genuinely traumatic. But this is the reason why we have to look at our charts from a karmic lens, because we would never consciously want to attract people that are argumentative. We have Mars as the ruler of our seventh house.
Right.
Like, we would never want to attract people that are, you know, coming in and trying to be overbearing in our lives. But it is that we have these energetic kind of, we have these inheritances that we come into life with.
The karmic lessons we signed up for in the Earth School curriculum.
So fun.
Such a fun time. We love Earth School. No, but I love that concept, because I think it takes some of the victim blaming like sense out of it. I think sometimes within this space, within manifestation, spirituality, astrology, you can hear like, well, you attracted that bad shit to you, which feels very victim blamey sometimes. And I think this sort of lens is much softer and kinder and protective over the individual versus like, well, it's your fault, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, you know, I'm a very practical and also skeptical babe. Like I'm not really that corny.
I need that on a t-shirt.
I'm not corny mushy really at all.
Yeah.
But you know, this, when I really discovered this about relationships and like how I've really just like become so attuned to relationship astrology in the past year, the law of attraction is real, you know. But then there's just so much more to looking at the astrology as looking at the entire mechanism of how we have come to be and what our natural field of attraction is. And that's the material that we want to transform, because we're not always attracting the things that we consciously desire. We might actually be attracting the things that we absolutely don't want.
Right.
So this is why it's like, you could ask about your partner. You could pull up your partner's chart. You could, you know, be obsessing over their moon and, you know, how it aligns with your sun and how it aligns with your Venus and why, you know, your Jupiters are not aligned or whatever. But really the issues that you're going to have, like the frustrations and the icks that you're going to have, are really reliant on like what's going on in your chart? What's going on with your Jupiter and your moon and your Venus? So it's like,
okay,
you could actually, you could potentially get along with anyone. I'll say it even louder. you can potentially get along with anyone if you are actually good with yourself.
Damn. That's the sound bite. Like, no, but no, really, like, this is such a lesson that I feel like transcends learning about, you know, the constellations and the planets and the aspects. Like, this is, we're looking so much outside of ourselves for love. I know this is the mushy corny. This is my mushy corny to like compliment your practicality. It's like, we're looking outside of ourselves for love, for partnership. And like, if we get right with ourselves, it doesn't matter if their son is squaring our son and the internet says they're the worst possible partner for you. There's so much that we can learn from this. And I love this concept of really digging into your own stuff, including like on how to navigate within relationships with other people. Like, it's there in your personal user manual.
100%.
So I feel like this is a good place to kind of like wrap it. I was going to say we could talk about astrocartography for a hot second, but I feel like that might be getting into the weeds a little bit. Leave it up to me to be like, let's make it extra complicated for no specific purpose. So I want to just refresh, review everything that we just dropped on you if this is new. So we're going to look for our descendant, which is the opposite of our ascendant or your rising sign, in order to start this journey and start to figure out how you're interfacing with relationships, who you're attracting, maybe what some of your icks might be or how you interface with other people. Then we're going to look for the ruler of your descendant, which is the planet that we outlined earlier. I'll also leave that in the episode description so you have a little cheat sheet. So we're going to look to where that is, what sign that's in, what house that's in. And would you say also, Oak, if it's aspected well, like if it's in a good position? That's a little more advanced, I suppose.
Totally. Well, if you're more advanced, I mean, you're going to want to look into every one of the finer details. So the condition
right,
of the planet,
course.
Aspects right. to the planet are really going to describe that, like just even more of like partnership tendency and personality.
Totally. So we've got those tools. And then if you are going to go deeper, you could look at the condition of your moon, aspects to your moon, to sort of understand your attachment style and communication. Obviously, look at your Mercury, your third house, which is communication, the ruler of your third house. Am I getting too deep?
Not really. I mean, it's like, okay. And I think what you're describing and you're articulating that it's an art to looking at relationships. Like, it's an art
because
there's a lot of different places that you can look. And, you know, essentially you can look at every single house in the birth chart as a relationship house. So don't limit yourself. Don't limit yourself to the idea of the seventh house. Like, you know, the seventh house is where we actually agree, where we create these agreements, these contracts between partnership, which is why marriage occurs in the seventh house. But then adjacent to the seventh house is the eighth house, which is where we actually see the inner world of the relationship itself. So the inner world of the relationship itself is the bedroom. And it's like, you know, when we are, you know, we get married and it's cute and we have the fucking photos and like, yeah, everyone like witnesses our union, but like what actually happens behind closed doors? And like, do we actually hate each other? Right. So it's like, do we have nice vibes with each other when we wake up in the morning? Like, what is the general theme of like what it's like when we share life together? Like the emotional dynamic of the relationship occurs in the eighth house. So if you have a very challenging eighth house, like you're going to have challenging relationships because what it means for you to merge with another person, sometimes it gets really messy and there can be a lot of resentments that come up just within those spaces. So, you know, we have to look at the eighth house as a way that, you know, sometimes we do make agreements with people like, you're my best friend, you're my favorite coworker, right? Like those are all like seventh house things. And then the eighth house is like what happens when we go a few octaves deeper in the relationship. Because sometimes when we get too deep, it can really create all these like weird dynamics where it's like, there's just, you know, jealousy and like where we feel like kind of, there can just be like weird power dynamics that show up. Like that's all happening in the eighth house. And you're like, oh my God, like this relationship is so not what I thought it was when we were doing the fifth house, right? When we were just dating and when it was fun and when we were just playing and when there was just banter, like that's going to be a lot more of like the way that we actually engage dating, right? Like, so if we're wanting love, we're wanting love and we haven't been in a, you know, like I've had gave so many readings this summer. I haven't been in a relationship in 10 years. And it's like, you know, help me. And then you have to look at the fifth house. You have to look at the availability of being open to other people and being, you know, curious and willing to take risks. And that is all about what dating is. So each and every one of the houses, but particularly the fifth and the eighth, like we want to look at those places to give us other information, because the relationship is when we agree, like you're my boyfriend. But there's all this other stuff that needs to kind of occur before we even get to that place. We need to go on a date, right? Which is why you're talking about the communication house. That's the entry point of actually being able to spark up a conversation and ask like a small talk question and be like, hey, I really love your dress. That is the moment that we met. And like that ability to have those moments of contact, that is the third house. Right. And if your self-concept, if who you think that you are and your ability to have confidence in yourself, probably the first house, maybe the second house, if those are weak, then you're not going to be able to go on a date with someone, likely because you're kind of like in your own wounding. Right.
Yeah.
So the entire birth chart tells us about what it means for you to be in love. And that's why it's like, you can't just say, tell me about my partnership. Like, no, boo, you have to like know yourself. You have to really understand these dynamics that create the situations when you're face to face with someone. The seventh house as the most opposite part of the ascendant, right? Or the, you know, the most opposite to the ascendant, the descendant. That is kind of, it's a circumstance. It's a result of almost everything else that you are.
The whole rest of that chart, everything that you just kind of outlined, and also like the leading up to the seven, like you're talking in the third house and then you make your way over to the fifth house, you're dating and you're figuring stuff out before you're like, okay, partner. Like there's so much lead up.
So much, so much. And like actually all of those first six houses before the seventh house, because they're, you know, under the horizon, metaphorically or literally, they're all these like developmental processes too. So it's like, if we're really looking at our birth chart from this lens of like, I want to become very intimate with myself so that I can show up in my partnerships in this very like clear, grounded and vulnerable way, then you have all these places to look, basically.
Cool. So it's also like, I don't know if this is related or if I got this correctly, but like figuring out those little points or those big points within those spaces of how to get out of your own way. Like what could be blocking you? What did come up in the past that maybe doesn't leave you ready for communication or ready for dating or comfortable dating or able to let someone in emotionally? Like there are all these little clues that you might be able to find in like, oh, I didn't know that was there. That was this dark corner of the basement that just didn't have a light on it. I had no idea it was there. Now I do. And I can clean that area.
Absolutely. 100%. Because the moment that you actually bring consciousness to yourself versus like being in these like kind of ignorant, repetitive actions, which we all have, then you're changing the vibration of what is actually coming through the door of the descendant.
Ah, we got to clean up so that door is vibrating higher.
Yeah, because it is law of attraction. And our birth chart is our vibration. It describes our vibration at worst and at best.
Ah, the shadow and the light energy.
So the more that
that's
we
so
like,
beautiful.
Yeah, the more we fine tune it, the more that we bring consciousness to these places where, you know, it's like some of our mannerisms and actions, like they might be even undesirable to us, and not necessarily that we have to demonize ourselves, but like we could tweak, we can add some tools.
spoken like a Virgo rising, we could edit.
You know, just a little rhinoplasty.
Yeah, just a little shaping. We could just edit this a little bit. Your life, your choices. This is why we understand each other. I'm doing it because I love you. Oh my God. Let the two Virgo risings help you edit your life to find love.
Oh my God, that sounds so bad.
I know. I work in marketing, it's fine. Oak, this was so much more than anyone, I think, bargained for at the beginning of this episode.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much.
I just have to say that, like, people were coming to me for love readings this entire summer. And I think that that was probably, like, the reaction that they all had is, like, they probably got off with me and they were just like, whoa.
Yeah, no, actually, like, and those of you listening now know by this point, Oak is not that person on TikTok who's going to be like, oh yeah, look at this. And like, your husband is here. Like, or yeah, in order to find love, all you have to do is look at this planet and then you're good. And you're going to find them here on this day. Like, that's not how this works in this world, especially with Oak. So hopefully by this point in the podcast, you get it. Oak, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want to add? You want to talk about your new podcast, any courses coming up where people can connect with you?
Word. Yeah. My consulting for readings and healings is oakastrology.com. And then my school website is oakastrologyschool.com. I have a full natal astrology course that is like on super sale for the holiday season right now. And yeah, it's an entire treatment of natal astrology, which is about 80 hours. A lot of what we talked about today is kind of like little snippets from my relationship astrology class, which is also on my school website. And I just launched the podcast. And it is called Absalom, the Art of Astrology and Demon Slaying. And so that is very descriptive of my personality. Mm-hmm. and yeah, I just talk about, you know, what does it really mean to, experience liberation? And so we really go into aspects of collective narrative and personal turmoil.
Sounds good. But it, no, I'm seriously so excited for you.
it all centers around love though, you know, and like, mm-hmm. I think that, you know, just in this conversation around love, yeah, it sounded dense, but it also is like the most profound thing that we'll ever experience in life. And that's kind of why we're here too. So why wouldn't it be like heart-wrenching and complicated at times?
Yeah, it's beautiful. More beautiful than any TikTok rom-com astrology we can come across. No, but truly. And for any of the little debutantes, I don't know why I keep calling you little debutantes, but any of the beginners here who are like, okay, I understood like, you know, 15% of that. I want to learn more. I would recommend, and Oak, tell me if you'd also recommend, just learning a lot about the sign of your descendant and just the qualities and the nature. And that will start to tell you more about your behavior in relationships, what you might be attracting in order to learn something about yourself. Like, let's say you are a Libra ascendant with an Aries descendant. Maybe just read a lot about the sign of Aries to just understand that energy. Would you also say that's a good place to start?
Yes, yes. And kind of like, it's a great place to start this contemplation, especially if you're like, wow, I really don't fucking relate to that at all. Because here's the thing, is like the chart does not lie. It's actually up to us to kind of decipher and figure out how this really does show up for me in my life. And so, especially if you don't relate to your descendant, then there's actually some really juicy tidbit there. And then when you go further and, you know, you look at the ruler, it's like, it's just more and more things to realize, because we have to remember that the descendant is not any separate from who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's all us.
The descendant is something that we attract. And we also are projecting out the things that we are kind of wanting to. So it is a both and with the descendant.
Mm-hmm. So start there. Don't get overwhelmed. This is just the beginning. Oak, thank you so much for sharing. This was such a gift. This is free educational content so people can learn more about themselves, about astrology, about love. It is such a beautiful offering that you have given us, anyone who's listening now or years from now. Thank you so, 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 so much. We're so grateful to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you learned so much today about yourself, your love life, what you're looking for, your soul path, and of course, some astrology. If your interest is piqued and you want to work with Oak directly, go to their website at oakastrologyschool.com. If you want to dive deeper into the topic of love and relationships with Oak, This Is Fine listeners get an exclusive 15% off their love course. Don't pull up your crush's chart with code Absolem, A-B-S-O-L-E-M. For those of you on the more eager side, those eager astro students, the popular full natal astrology course is on mega sale for a limited time, so be sure to check that out as well. You can follow Oak on Instagram at Oak Astrology School, all one word, and catch their new podcast, Absalom, The Art of Astrology and Demon Slaying. As always, you've got all the links you need in the episode description. We're so happy to be producing these podcasts between San Diego and Paris, and we are so grateful for you joining us on this adventure. Let us know what you want to hear next at imfine@thisisfinepodcast.com. And please don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating, send this episode to a friend, and hit the subscribe button. Every little bit helps our community grow so we can keep bringing you these beautiful free educational posts, and I can keep giving Stella her really expensive healthy food. Kidding, but not kidding. Happy holidays, my loves. I hope you're having a wonderful time wherever you are in the world. Big hugs, big kisses, gros bisous. A bientôt. Bye. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of This Is Fine. I've been your host, Dominique Michelle Astorino. We're based in San Diego, recording in studio at DLI Productions in
Paris,
Pacific Beach, with Emmy Award-winning sound designer Dan De La Isla. This is a comedy and advice podcast, but for legal reasons, this entire podcast is a joke and none of it is medical advice. To download a transcript or learn more, visit thisisfinepodcast.com.